So this morning I've been asked to speak on two passages in Judges, Judges 14 and Judges 15. And we can summarize the content of those passages up in three words: murder, mayhem, and mischief. So this morning that's what we're going to talk about: murder, mayhem, and mischief. And I'm sure you're going to wonder, those passages are really in the Bible? Well, we're going to find out. So let's deal with the passage itself. So let's tell the story. During the time that the passage talks about, God's people, Israel, were dominated by another group called the Philistines. Philistines were, quite frankly, a pain to the children of Israel. They dominated them for a number of years, and they gave them trouble all the way down for many, many years. In fact, it was David and Goliath, and that story still deals with the problem of the Philistines. Strange thing about the Philistines is that no one could find any archaeological evidence for them. They seem to have been a people that disappeared off the face of the earth with absolutely no trace. And of course, the skeptics said right away, there was no such people of the Philistines. The writers of the Bible made it up. People don't exist. And then very shortly, I think it may have been in the last 10 or 15 years, an archaeologist was digging in an area that no one had ever dug before, and he found traces of a civilization called the Philistines. The Bible is right, the skeptics are wrong. He found that the people were very advanced, very technological for their age. And so there was a great appreciation for who these Philistines were. They were extremely intelligent, strong people. And they dominated the children of Israel. So our story comes in. Samson goes down to a city and he finds there a pretty girl. He says, I'd like to marry that girl. Comes back and tells his mom and dad, hey, I'd like to marry that girl. And they say, no way. She's from the wrong group. Surely you can find a local girl that's just as pretty, just as smart, just as intelligent. And I'm sure that conversation is not the first time that's happened when a boy has come home and talked to his dad and mum about a girl he wants to marry. And so mum and dad could not persuade him that this girl was probably not the right girl. So both of them, together with Samson, go down to the city of Timnah, where this girl lived, to arrange a bridal price. That's right, you had to pay for the bride. And there was negotiations between the bride's side and the groom's side as to how much the groom's side was going to have to pay. Prettier the girl, smarter the girl, the more you're going to have to pay. So as they're going down, Samson and his mum and dad are going down to Timnah, a lion comes out. So Samson kills the lion with his bare hands, leaves the carcass probably some distance away from the... They go on their way and they come down to Timnah and they negotiate with the bride's mum and dad for a price. They go back to their village. Now that's the tradition. You go back to your village and you wait a couple of weeks. It was a time for sober second thoughts. Is she really the girl for me? Is it really worth the price? Is it worth spending all that money on my daughter-in-law to be? Those are the sort of questions that Samson's mum and dad would have. And obviously in the discussion, they'd come reluctantly, I think, to the agreement that they were going to have to pay it anyway. And so they start to go back to Timnah for the actual marriage ceremony. So they reach the place where Samson had killed the lion. And Samson, being the curious sort of guy, walked to the side and said, I wonder, what happened to that lion I killed? Finds that bees had made a hive in the in the carcass. And so he's got smart and thinks, boy, there's got to be some good honey there. I'm hungry. I need a roadside snack. Remember, there are no McDonald's. There are no Tim Hortons on the way. There is no anything for food. You got to take it yourself. So here was a ready wayside snack to have. So he goes in, grabs some honey, takes it for himself, and gives it to Mum and Dad. So they come, and the wedding ceremony starts to take place. Now, this isn't a Western Canadian wedding that takes place in an hour, and then you have a meal maybe, and then it's over. This is a Middle Eastern wedding that can take up to 7 or 8 days to get done. So there's a first part, and the bride is introduced to the groom, and instead of having, like we have, one or two groomsmen, Samson has 30 groomsmen, 30 people helping. We don't know how many bridesmaids she had, but probably something like the same. So Samson decides to play some intellectual games with these 30 guys. And he gives them a riddle, and Samson is very good at riddles. And when I was growing up, there was a big sugar company in the UK called Tate & Lyle. And they made a product called golden syrup, which my mum used in cooking. And on the can, it was a green can, and there was an orange oval. And the picture in the orange oval was of a lion lying on the ground and bees floating around it. And the wording was, out of the eater came forth meat, out of the eater came forth sweet. Just the Samson riddle that he gives to his people. So from a young kid, when I could read, I learned that saying from Tate & Lyle's golden syrup can. So I learned that riddle when I was quite young. So of course Samson gives this to the riddle to the people, and they can't find it. And they go to Samson's wife after about 4 days and say, come on, give us some help. We need to find us what this riddle is, because it's going to bankrupt us if we don't. We're going to have to pay him a lot of money in terms of clothes. So she turns on the waterworks and says, oh, Samson, do you really love me? You can't really love me if you don't tell me the reason of the riddle. I mean, you can just see the waterworks turning. And Samson says, I've told my mum and dad. Why should I tell you? There's a fundamental flaw. Samson has yet to realize that in a marriage, allegiances change. No longer is mum and dad number one, but now it's your wife. And he's still thinking in terms of mum and dad. Well, eventually he gives in and he tells his bride the mystery, the riddle. She, of course, tells the 30 groomsmen what the riddle is. And when Samson asks them, hey, what does the riddle mean? They tell him without any trouble. Then becomes a piece of English that I'm sure we would find objectionable. He says, if you wouldn't have been plowing with my heifer, you would have never found that out. Awful, awful. He called his wife a heifer. What a terrible way of describing things. This is Samson. So he needs to find 30 articles of clothing very, very quickly. Quickest way? Go out and kill 30 guys, take their clothes, and give them to the guys who were supposed to be the groomsmen. Very simple solution to the problem. And that's exactly what he did. He went out, killed 30 people, stripped them of their clothes, and gave them to his groomsmen. Well, you don't hang around the town when you kill 30 people. So Samson left for a while, and then he said, you know, maybe I should go back and see my wife. So he goes back to see his wife and find out that actually the dad has given her away. He's given her to another fellow. After all, why should he give back the bridal price? It was his. He'd made some money on his daughter. Didn't want to lose it. So then what happens is Samson gets a little upset at this. So he takes some foxes, puts torches on their tails, and let them run through the grain, which was already ripe and of course all the grain burns. Now people for the ethical treatment of animals would have a huge problem with putting live lighted torches on foxes' tails. I think most of us would have an objection of using wild animals like that. But still, that's what Samson did. And so they burn all the grain. The leaders of the Philistines said, who did this? Who's responsible for it? And Samson's wife and his father-in-law are burned to death. Unpleasant conversation. So then the Philistines say, you know, who caused this problem? Oh, Samson. He killed 30 Philistines. We should really arrest him and deal with him. So instead of the Philistines dealing with him, they said, why don't you people of his own tribe deal with him? Because if we don't punish him, we'll punish you. So the people of the tribe of Judah went and talked to Samson and said, you know, we're in deep trouble. If we don't hand you over, the Philistines will come and destroy you. Please allow us to capture you and hand you over to the Philistines. Samson says, fine. As long as you don't kill me, I'm fine with that. So he's handed back over to the Philistines, and he breaks his cord like it's no tomorrow, seizes a jawbone from an ass, which would be about this long, and starts laying and waxing people mightily. And thousands of Philistines are killed by Samson's rage and his skill with the jawbone of an ass. And then at the end of it, he makes another rhyme, another riddle, and says, with the jawbone of an ass I made dumb. Quite a guy with words. So the question becomes, this story, these two chapters of murder, mayhem, and mischief, why are they in the Bible at all? Why are they there? And my answer to that is, listen, the Bible is written, and it shows people with all their faults. In fact, there's only one person in the Bible who's never described as having any faults at all. And that's Daniel. Yes, says Jesus, but a regular human being. Daniel is the sole one. All the rest have flaws. All the rest have warts. All the rest have deficiencies. And you know, it's nice to know that the Bible is written about characters like you and me with warts and flaws, because at least we can identify. The second thing is that we read that the scriptures are written for our instruction so that we can have hope. And so we have to learn something from this passage that gives us hope. And we'll talk about that later. The third thing is that we have a trouble in Western Canada of taking these passages and we try to impose on them our moral values, our way of thinking, and we can't do that. The time when Israel was occupied by the Philistines, where the Philistines ruled them, it's very hard to imagine being ruled by a people who have no sympathy with your culture, no sympathy with your God. In fact, will try in their best to obliterate you. And it makes it very difficult for us to look and say, hey, these guys are wrong. They should never have. So we need to find out some more things about Samson. Number one, let's have a look at some of his flaws. Samson broke commandments. Of the Ten Commandments, Samson broke at least two. Commandment that says, honor father and mother. Now, we have some challenges with the word honor father and mother. What does that mean? Does that mean that even when we're adults, we have to listen implicitly and follow all the directions our parents give? That's not what it says. It doesn't say obey mother and father. It says honor mother and father. And the word honor in the Old Testament means give weight to, give thought to, give serious attention to what mom and dad are saying. And in the situation that Samson was, mom and dad said, listen, Samson, you're going to marry the wrong girl. This marriage is going to be a disaster. This marriage is wrong from square one. Don't do it. And Samson says, you know what? I couldn't care less. She's the right one for me. I love her. The light has gone on and it says this one, and I'm going to marry her. I don't care what you say. And so he broke the commandment about honoring mom and dad. He broke the commandment about do not murder. He murdered at least 30 guys just so he could get their clothes to give to the groomsmen. Now you might argue, and well, I will be prepared to argue the point that in a time of war, which is what happens, was happening between Israel and Philistine, some things happen that are outside the normal rules. And we could have argued that maybe Samson was justified in his murdering or killing people because it was a time of virtual war between Israel and the Philistines. I have some difficulty with that because he murdered 30 people just to get their clothes so he could give them away. So he's guilty of breaking at least two commandments. He's guilty of breaking convention. Convention was that he was a Nazarite. And as a Nazarite, there were certain things you did not do. One of them was touch dead animals. It's not done. Touching things that were unclean. Samson did it twice. He went into the carcass of the lion to get his roadside snack, the honey, and he took the jawbone from the ass in order that he could use it as a tool, as a weapon. So twice he broke, at least, he broke the convention. Rules didn't mean anything to him. Conventions didn't mean. There was a convention, and his mom and dad make mention of it, that you don't marry anyone from outside Israel. When the children of Israel moved into the promised land, one of the things God made absolute emphasis on is don't marry the local people. Stay away from them. Have nothing to do with them. Don't marry them under any circumstances. Samson says, don't care. Don't care. She's the one for me. She looks good. I love her. I'm going to marry her. And so he defies conviction. And the last thing is that Samson defies common sense. Samson is a judge. He's the ruler of Israel. He's the guy that's supposed to enforce the rules. He's the guy that's supposed to set an example. He's the leader. So if the leader feels free to go and marry a woman from the Philistines, why shouldn't everyone else do it? Because if Samson does it, why can't we do it? So he was defying common sense. He was being an extremely poor example. Breaking commandments, breaking conventions, breaking common sense. And so we look and we say, my, this two chapters of murder, mayhem, and mischief. What possible use is it for us today in 20th century North America for us to learn as lessons? Oh, I think there is a very, very valuable lesson. Samson was obviously a very flawed man. He had problems with his temper. He had a violent temper. And when his temper got his better of him, he was not above killing 30 people just to take their clothes. A violent temper. He was extremely rude to women. He had a very poor opinion of women. Culture did somewhat contribute to that, but he seems to have exaggerated. He had a very poor attitude towards life itself. I don't care what it takes, I want it. And I will go to any extreme to get it. It's mine, be because it's mine, because it's mine. And yet, despite all those flaws, despite all those shortcomings, God can still use him. What's even more amazing is if we go to the book of Hebrews and chapter 11, there is there a list of heroes from the Old Testament, people who did great deeds for God. Abraham's listed. Moses is listed there. The great guys in the Old Testament who did wonderful things for God are all listed there. And who's included in the list? That's right. Samson's there. Samson, this flawed individual with all these faults, is listed in the heroes of faith. What a shock. If anyone should be taken off that list, if anyone shouldn't be there, it's Samson, because he had so many faults, so many flaws, so many things he does wrong. And as I looked at this passage, I looked and say, I am a man with many flaws, many flaws. And what so encourages me and gives me hope is that if God can use a guy like Samson with even more flaws than me, he can use me. And if Samson can put his name, have his name put in the hall of fame of faith, despite all his faults, then maybe one day I will get a reward that says, well done, good and faithful servant. Despite your flaws, despite your mess-ups, despite your goof-ups, you serve me. And so this morning, the take-home message, the new phrase, the take-home message is this. Don't be discouraged if you have flaws. Flaws are natural. And God can use you for his glory despite your flaws. He used Samson with many of them. He can use you and me as well. The scriptures are so written that by the encouragement of the scripture, we can have hope. And this is the hope we have, that despite all our limitations, despite our flaws, despite our weaknesses, God can use us for his praise and glory. Let's never make the excuse, I'm unable to do it because I have a weakness. And I'm able to do it because there's something wrong in my life. If Samson said that, he wouldn't have ever done anything. And you and I are given encouragement from Samson that there is no reason we should ever say, I am weak, I have flaws, God can't use me. God can use you, despite the flaws, despite the weaknesses, for his praise and glory. Father, we thank you for your word that out of this story that is questionable as why it should even be in the Bible in one sense, you provide us with a really powerful lesson. And we're staggered and amazed that you want to use us. And we're staggered and amazed that you can use us despite our flaws and our weaknesses. Lord, help us to get our heads around the fact that you can use us despite our weaknesses, despite our flaws. You can use us for your praise and glory. And so we commit ourselves to you, Lord. May we never use the excuse, I can't do it because I have this flaw in my life. So we commit ourselves to you. Help us to work through our flaws. Help us to work through our weaknesses to your honor and praise and glory. We commit ourselves to you.